Hello, I'm Gary Pittard here with Peter O'Malley, author of the exciting new book, Inside Real Estate. Peter, in a nutshell, what are we going to learn from Inside Real Estate?
Gary, real estate consumers are going to learn how to cut through real estate agents' hype. The real estate industry is run from a very self-interested point of view, and real estate agents are often playing a game the consumers are unaware of. I wanted the consumers to be empowered by really reading Inside Real Estate and be prepared to take real estate agents on in the arena.
You raise an interesting conundrum for both home sellers and home buyers. Who can you trust?
Firstly and mostly, real estate consumers need to be able to trust themselves when they enter into the market. When you are a real estate consumer, whether you're a buyer or a seller, you're treading amongst vested interest. And a salesperson's interests and your interests are sometimes aligned and often they're not. For example, home buyers are often misled into bidding at auctions purely and simply so the agent's got enough bidders on the day. So what I say at the beginning of Inside Real Estate is I give a detailed explanation where the real estate consumer needs to take control back, if you like, from the estate agent when they're transacting. And there's many companies and many disruptors that are entering the industry that are enabling that to happen.
Why is it important that home sellers and home buyers ask some tough questions?
If you don't ask the tough questions before you sign a contract of sale to purchase or an agency agreement to sell, it's often too late after you sign. So you need to know what the tough questions are, but you need to have the confidence to ask them of an estate agent. And if you're not getting the answers that you're happy with from the tough questions, what that means is you need to move on and find another agent.
Peter, what are some of those tough questions?
Well, okay, let's say you're selling your home, for example, Gary, and a real estate agent drops a leaflet in your letterbox saying, call us, we've got buyers that might be interested in your home. You call the real estate agent out and they say, look, we'd like to run a campaign here, and the advertising packages are a $3,000 option, a $5,000 option, or a $10,000 option. Right there and then, the consumer needs to be able to say to the real estate agent, you dropped a flyer in my mailbox saying you had buyers that'd be interested in the home, so why do you now need $3,000, $5,000, or $10,000 to go and find buyers for my property when it's a property boom outside? If you have a real estate agent suggesting that you auction your home, I still have never had a real estate agent explain to me succinctly how you have an auction with one buyer. If you do go to auction and you've got two buyers on auction day and one's prepared to pay $1.1 million and the next best offer's $980,000, how does the auction go from $980,000 to $1.1 million when the underbidder drops out? These are the sorts of tough questions that consumers need to put to real estate agents before signing with anyone. If you're a buyer, for example, and you see an apartment that's advertised with a price guide of $1 million, but you know that a similar apartment sold last week for $1.1 million, have the confidence to ask that real estate agent, what makes you think this property is going to sell for $1 million this week when an equal or similar property sold for $1.1 million last week?
Is it necessarily true that rising markets are good and falling markets are bad?
Rising markets don't benefit everyone, Gary, and falling markets don't hurt everyone. So, for example, we've been in a property boom in the last 5 years in Sydney and Melbourne, but that's clearly been to the disadvantage of first home buyers. The people that benefit most from rising markets are actually baby boomers who are looking to downgrade because the property they're selling, the $2 million property they're selling, might have risen by 10%, for example, in the last 6 months, which means it's gone up by $200,000, where the property they're going to buy, the $1 million apartments, only moved from $1 million to 1.1. And that works in reverse in a falling market, where what we quite often say to young families, the best time to upgrade your family home is in a falling market, because the house you're buying is falling by a greater amount of money than the house you're selling.
You offer some good advice for people when it comes to structuring the move when they're selling and then buying again. What are some of these tips?
Look, first and foremost, when it comes to buying and selling in the same market, is most people try to buy and sell on the same day, and that's just way too problematic and difficult to engineer. Some people are able to engineer it, but in most instances you won't be able to do so. So what I say to people is, let's stop or not even start trying to buy and sell on the same day, and let's focus on settling the transaction on the same day, because ultimately when someone says I want to buy and sell together, what they're saying is I want to leave the house I'm selling and move straight into the house that I'm buying without an interim residence there or sleeping in a hotel for a month as the transactions are waiting to settle. So putting your home on the market, Gary, doesn't mean you're selling it. It means you've got a real estate agent looking for a buyer for your home. Going out and looking at homes to purchase doesn't mean you're buying. It's just that you're just looking to purchase. And no matter which transaction you do first, whether you buy first or you sell first, you get a delayed settlement on that transaction. And that enables you enough time to conduct the second half of the equation, whether that be buy or sell. I think it's really easy to avoid bridging finance by clever use of delayed settlements. So if you do purchase a property before you've sold, get a 3 or a 4 month settlement on that purchase, and it gives you enough time to sell your existing home and settle that sale without having to pay the bank bridging finance.
You talk about the auction system versus the silent auctions, but auctions are auctions, aren't they?
There's a clear case in inside real estate, Gary, as to why I don't advocate the public auction system. Public auctions are transparent bidding. So if we've got a $1.1 million buyer who's bidding against a $980,000 buyer, whilst the auction might start at $900,000 and look really competitive between $900,000 and $980,000, the party who's turned up to the auction and willing and able to bid $1.1 million for the property is suddenly the highest bidder at $981,000. Now, some people think that you can put a high reserve on your home when you're auctioning it, and that offers some protection. But if you show a $1.1 million buyer, for example, that all of the competition has dropped out at $980,000, okay, you might get the buyer up a little bit from $980,000, but that buyer is never going to give you $1.1 when they see the marketplace has dropped out so far below what they're prepared to pay. At a silent auction, we encourage vendors to keep all of the bidding confidential, and what we often see is a spread between 4 and 6% between what the highest paying buyer is prepared to pay for a home and the second highest buyer is prepared to pay. And when you consider that real estate agents' fees are about 2%, getting an extra 4 to 6% on the sale price of your home means that you will have used the agent's services for essentially free and still got value out of it at that.
For sellers, is an off-market transaction a good thing? Many agents seem to offer this kind of service these days.
A lot of real estate agents are recommending off-market transactions, Gary, because they've gone out and signed contracts with website providers that it forced them to spend a lot of money with those website providers on every listing. And what's happening is the consumer has said to the real estate agent, there's no way we're going to spend $3,000 or $5,000 advertising our house on the internet, given it's a property boom out there. If you've got a buyer for my house, you're welcome to bring them through. But if you want to spend that sort of money on web advertising, Mr. or Mrs. Real Estate Agent, you can spend your own money. And now that consumers don't want to spend that sort of money on website advertising, funny enough, the real estate agents don't either, Gary, and the happy medium there is an explosion of off-market transactions across Sydney. And what I say to people is that because you can sell off-market doesn't mean that you should. And in a property market, the greatest losses can occur at the times of greatest gains. Where selling for a good price in a boom doesn't mean that you've achieved the best price. So you can sell off-market if you want to, and you will get a transaction. But the only way you can be assured of getting the very best price is by going to the open market. And that doesn't mean that you need to spend excessive amounts of money advertising your house on the internet, but an open market transaction is far more advisable in a boom than an off-market transaction.
Peter, talk to us about bait pricing. This is a trap for both buyers and sellers, isn't it?
Bait pricing, or underquoting as it's known, is rampant in the marketplace since dummy bidding became outlawed, because as we've just posed the question, how do you have an auction with one buyer? That's pretty difficult. So what a real estate agent needs, if they've only got one serious buyer interested in a property, is they need more bidders. In the past, those agents would have planted dummy bidders, Gary, to give the perception of more people than is the fact being interested in the property. Now real estate agents have been known to quote properties below the market price to attract a number of aspirational, hopeful bidders into bidding at the auction, and that then gives the illusion that the auction is a competitive sale. And home buyers need to be wary of this in the marketplace. All of the respective state governments have done their best to try and stamp it out, but unless they're investigating every single sale every single week, underquoting will take place in some format or another.
Peter, are property investors left out, or is there some good advice for them in Inside Real Estate?
Primarily, Inside Real Estate is a book to help you transact better, whether you're a home seller, a home buyer, or an investor. There's some information in Inside Real Estate that will help investors that I think are holes in the investing market, if you like, Gary. For example, I often see residential investors don't know the difference between gross yield and net yield. And when you think about all of the modern apartments that have gone up, the high strata levies can chew up 25% of the annual rent in strata fees. And that really works what seems to be a healthy gross yield into a pretty poor net yield. So there's a lot being written in the marketplace about residential investing, and the points that I zero in on in Inside Real Estate around investing are what I see as the holes in the marketplace.
Thanks, Peter. I certainly am excited about the release of Inside Real Estate. It contains a lot of valuable information for anybody who's thinking of buying, selling, or investing in real estate. Good inside information from an industry professional. And thank you for listening to this podcast. Please do yourself a favour and get hold of a copy of Inside Real Estate by Peter O'Malley. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Thank you for listening.